All right, we are back for another episode of the Fried Egg Podcast, and we are excited today to have Stuart Hagestad as our guest. Stuart won this year's U.S. Mid-Am, and that earned him an invitation into next year's Masters, and he's also a likely candidate for the 2017 Walker Cup team. Stuart, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Excited to get this thing going.
Yeah. So we'd love if you could tell us a little bit about yourself, give everybody a little background on how you got into golf, and we'll kind of go from there.
Sure. So I was lucky enough to grow up in Orange County, California, and I grew up on a golf course called Big Canyon. My dad's a great guy. He loves to play. As I kind of laughed him about, he's like a 14, he thinks he's a 5 and plays like a 20. My mom's the closet athletic one in the family. She, you know, she'll never admit it, but every time I see her throw a football or hit a golf ball, it's right up the middle or with a perfect spiral. So I think between the two of them, you know, between those two things and growing up on a golf course, I kind of just, I just really gravitated towards the game. There was this kid who was pretty good when he was young. He would always play by himself, and I'm sure he was playing worst ball or playing two balls or something, but I don't remember this, but I guess in 97 when I was watching the Masters on TV, I told my parents that that was Tiger, and that's the story that they like to kind of, you know, refer back to. You know, they knew pretty early that I was, you know, pretty interested in the game. So my dad went to SC, and I've been going to football games since I was young. My middle school and early high school years were the Reggie Bush and Leinart and Pete Carroll days, so I don't think I had, you know, much of a choice of where I was going to end up going. So I went to SC. I was a business major. Loved playing golf, but realized pretty quickly that there was a lot of talent out there. So I had the opportunity to work a couple spots when I was in college over the summer. And I knew once I graduated I wanted to stay competitive, but wasn't quite sure how I would do that and how aggressively I would pursue, you know, amateur golf. And I think just after college, it really made me realize just how much I love the game, and I'm lucky enough to still be in love with it now. So it's been a lot of fun. It's been a great couple of years, but excited for the next chapter kind of going forward for sure.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's a lot of AMs that don't have the game to turn pro. It's you know, me being one of them, just being able to get the competitive juices flowing while you're working, while you have a job, it just is great to, you know, get out and enjoy competition. And you know, you've had quite the career. So tell us a little bit about you know, playing at USC and what that was like.
Sure. Yeah. You know, we had a great team when I was there. Coach Zamri and I have a great relationship. When I came in, I don't know what we were ranked, but it was kind of up there with the teams of the time. It was like the Oklahoma States and the Georgia had a really good team. I think they had like Harris English and Russell Henley. I think Hudson was there. Oklahoma State's team was littered with good players. It was like the Leon brothers and Trent Whitekiller and Shine Einhouse and Peter Uline, and I think Ricky was there my freshman year. Morgan Hoffman was there. It was crazy. So the expectation was high. I mean, the kids on the SC team, I think the year before I got there, they had 5 All-Americans or something close to it. They had Matt Giles, Tom Glissmeyer, Jimmy Lovemark, Tim Sluder. I think Rory Hee left the year before. One of your guys, I think Ryan Linton was on the team, I think the year before. But yeah, the standard was high, so it was great, and it was a great opportunity to kind of figure out just how good I really was compared to the best guys out there. And I love Coach Zambri, and funny how as you get older, you begin to kind of appreciate, you know, what he told you a lot more. And he was kind of like, Stu, like, you're good, but you need to get a lot better, and you need to do it in a hurry.
It's interesting. I hear from our earlier podcast, Justin Silverstein was on, USC's assistant coach. He says that you are one of the best iron players statistically they've ever had there.
That's probably because of how short I hit it. I can't afford to miss my numbers very often, but I think he's giving me a lot more credit than I deserve with that one. I've seen some of the boys, and I love Coach and I love Justin, but I guess I'll just take that compliment and kind of run with it.
Yeah. Hey, you know, you mentioned Tom.
I'll take what I can get.
You mentioned Tom Glissmeyer. That's a name I haven't heard in forever. Do you know what he's up to nowadays?
I think he is either working to get his amateur status back. I know he's kind of moved on from professional golf. I haven't really talked to him. I can find out. I know a few of the boys he's close with. Last I remember, I thought he was either, I want to say like in Texas or maybe back home in Colorado. But Tom was really, really bright. And he was kind of one of the guys I remember when I was being recruited that, you know, he always kind of said, hey, you know, there's life beyond golf. I'm not going to do the communication major thing. I'm going to be an econ major. I'm going to set myself up for the future. And I've always had a ton of respect for Tom. He's a stud. And he was even more studly in college. He was definitely one of the guys that I kind of looked up to, both from my golf and from a character standpoint.
Yeah, yeah, it's one of those guys that you wonder how it didn't work out, but that's golf, you know, happens all the time.
Absolutely.
It's so you know, when you won the U.S. Mid-Am, you know, there's the infamous video of Justin Thomas celebrating, going nuts. You know, heard Jordan Spieth, and you guys are great buddies. What would you say, you know, the difference in your game and their game is, and you know, how evident is it?
Yeah, I mean, I would say a few things. You know, I've been lucky enough to know both those kids since we played junior golf together. And first, I'll touch on Jordan because that's the more obvious one to me. Jordan's been the best putter I've ever seen since he was 15. I like here's a quick fun story for you. So I don't know why they had a playoff for fourth place in this Texas Junior Golf Tour event that we played in a long time ago, but basically they wanted to give away the trophy, so they threw this 14-year-old kid out with me, and if you Google it, I'm sure the picture's still up. I was wearing black shoes and a white belt, just a rookie mistake all around. I had this big surfer afro thing that I thought was cool back in the day. But we end up going out to this hole. I make a great up and down. He, you know, doesn't get up and down. I end up beating him. And I like to continually remind him just how, you know, indicative that was of both of our careers. You know, now I'm sitting here working and he's on tour, you know, doing whatever he wants. But no, Jordan is the best putter I've ever seen. And when you make 25 putters on a somewhat regular basis, it makes your mid and long irons seem, I think, a lot better than they are. I mean, it's not like he's bad by any stretch, but, you know, when you hit it to the middle of the green, it makes it pretty stress-free when you're as good of a putter as he is. And the other thing, too, is he has this innate ability, from what I've seen, both when we played together and on TV, but his short game only gets better under pressure. A lot of the better players have it where, you know, when the chips are down and when, you know, it's coming down to the 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th hole. You saw it a few years ago at the Masters. I mean, that up and down on 18 in the third round is impossibly hard. Mm-hmm. And as a better player, you understand just how good that is. But he's just so, so efficient around the greens. And then as far as JT goes, he just has so much speed, and he's just very, very efficient. And I've always kind of said for a while he's just as good as Jordan, just maybe a couple of years behind in terms of kind of growth on the golf course, but he'll be right there. And it would shock me if he wasn't soon inside the top 5, 8, 10 in the world. And then the last thing is just between the two of them and a lot of the guys out there is they just believe in themselves. You know, they're like the idea of not being a top player in the world just isn't a thing. You know, we go out and, you know, you're a good player and you get, you know, 3, 4, 5 under par after the winter months. And, you know, it's kind of like, oh, you know, is it okay to be this low? I mean, those guys, shoot, they get it to 6, 7, 8, 9 in PGA Tour events and they get their pedal to the floor. So
Yeah.
I think it's kind of a combo of those things for sure.
I like get scared once I hit like four under par. It's like, whoa, don't want to screw this up.
I'm good till about six or seven, and it's kind of like, cool. Pretty low still. Keep it going.
It is quite ironic how, like, you get there, and then for some reason your brain, like, oh, just don't mess this up, and rather than being like, oh, just keep doing what you're doing, you know, it's...
Yeah, no, it's the more times you do it, you know, I've gotten better over the years, but you can always get better, but it's wild to me just how good those boys are on a tour when they're just, you know, casually 8 or 9 under par on, like, 14 or 15, and, you know, every golf blog out there, including myself, is just like, oh, boy. Boys are taking it low. See how low they can go.
Yeah. So, you know, are you a little, you know, upset you didn't get an invite to Spring Break 2016? And do you think you could have added some valuable, a value add to the experience if you could get a call for 2017?
Hey, I think I could add value, but, you know, it's funny. I've thought about this before, and, you know, I have buddies that have kind of asked me about it, and I love having my life be very private, and I try and, for the most part, kind of stay off social media. So at first I was kind of like, yeah, it looks fun, and, you know, it sounds amazing, and then the more I kind of think about it after you sleep on it, it's kind of like, you know, probably not the worst idea that you didn't get the invite to. Besides, no one needs to see you with your shirt off anyways. So, hey, I'll leave it up to them, but, yeah, that's where we're going to go with that. I can definitely say that if I get an invite for 2017, it'll be the second, you know, biggest invite I'm receiving in the spring.
Yeah. Perfect segue. So, you know, one would say that the next 9 months of your life outside of, like, you know, having a kid, or it could possibly be the best 9 months of your life, assuming you get onto that Walker Cup team. So what's it like knowing with the Masters and potentially the Walker Cup coming up, like, that this is the best 9 months of your life, heading, you know, first Masters, first Walker Cup?
Sure. Well, real quick, I mean, in regards to the Walker Cup, I mean, look, and Scott and I have discussed this before, you know, we put ourselves in a position where we're on the radar, but, you know, there's a lot of work to be done, and you definitely have to earn your way, you know, to even be considered. I mean, it's an honor to have been at the practice session, but there's a lot of things that need to be done there, I mean, from a lot of different standpoints, but... Yeah, the next 9 months are going to be pretty cool. You know, as I've joked to you before, and like you just alluded to, you know, outside of having a kid or getting married, it's a good spot to be in. But at the same time, there's also a lot of expectation that I've put on myself, and, you know, there's a lot of people that are making the trip down, and I don't want to make it seem like I'm putting, you know, other pressure on me, but I think I've gotten past that stage, and now I'm just really trying to use it as motivation. How efficient can I be with the time that I have before that? You know, I've got a few events that I'm playing kind of leading up to the Masters to prepare, and I really just want to go with what the old adage says. I want to take it one day at a time. I want to focus on the little things, be very detail-oriented, be goal-oriented, and one great thing about this thing that happened last week up at LA is you got an opportunity to really kind of, you know, see how good some of the best guys in college golf are. And, you know, it'll be really neat to kind of see how to test your game and to really see if they are against the best in the world. It's a learning experience. Will I be upset if I don't play great down there? Yeah, sure. But, you know, it's something I've dreamed about ever since I was a kid. And, as I just said, you know, it'll be a great opportunity to test my game against the world's best. And I think if I prepare the right way and I have the right attitude going into it, I think I can, you know, I have the game and the mentality to hopefully surprise a couple of the boys that do it for a living. But either way, I mean, just the week and really even after that, as I kind of play some of the bigger amateur events throughout the summer, really cool, special time to focus on something I really love to do. And, you know, after that's over, I'm sure I'll get to reflect with friends and family over how that time was from a learning experience and also from a golf standpoint. So it's pretty cool. And I'm very, very blessed and very lucky and really just kind of humbled to be in the position that I have. And I'm going to try and make the most of it.
Yeah, I think just soak it all in is probably the best, you know, thing. Just, you know, enjoy it, because you never know. Like, you know, I think about the speech that they gave at the Mid-Am. It's like, you know, you never know when you're going to be back, and, you know, that it's just got to enjoy every aspect of it.
Cool. Yeah, for sure. And a lot of guys have kind of echoed the same thing. You know, I talked to Max Homa about his experience at the U.S. Open, or a couple weeks ago I was with Tim Hogarth, and he was talking about his time after he won the Pub Links and had the chance to go down there. And both of them kind of said the same thing. They were both, you know, kind of said, hey, you know, obviously go and play great, have the mentality that you want to go down there and you play to win. You know, it doesn't really matter the scale of the event, whether it's a club event or literally a major. But at the same time, also appreciate the opportunity while you're there to kind of look around and to look at, you know, how gorgeous the flowers are on the side of 13, or to see friends and family that made the trip to be there and to support you. It's a really neat deal. And, you know, as I said, I absolutely want to make the most of it. But as an old college coach who's now at Baylor, Coach McGraw said, the golf ball has no idea who you are. So, you know, just go down there and do the best you can. And that's all you can do is focus on what you can control.
That's good advice. So we'll get more into the Masters and, you know, kind of what you're doing. I want to first touch on your win at the U.S. Mid-Am. So
sure.
For those that didn't see it on TV, one of the most, you know, thrilling finishes of any golf tournament of the year. You were four down with five to go, right? Four down with five to go, and made, you know, four birdies in the last five holes to pull even with Scott Harvey, one of the best mid-am players in the world.
Amateurs in the world.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's been the medalist at the mid-am four times in, I think, what, the last 6 years or something like that?
Something like that. I mean, it's pretty safe to schedule him in there to make match play just about every year.
Yeah, and be a high seed. So
he's a chalk pick for sure.
Walk us through kind of the week. Like, did you have a feeling going in? Like, did your game feel really good? You know, was it something that, you know, you felt like you had a really great chance to win when you got there?
Yeah. And forgive me, I have a tendency to kind of ramble. Earlier this summer, I played really great at the Metropolitan Amateur. I played great in stroke play. And then after that, I ended up winning the thing. So it cuts from a field of, call it, 80 to 16, and then it's kind of match play from then on in. So I had some match play experience. And, you know, there was a few times in a few of those matches where I was medalist in stroke play, and, you know, everyone kind of had, I had a target on my back, so I felt like I really kind of had to bring it, you know, for every match. So I was down, you know, at times kind of going into the back nine, and I was able to grind it back, and I actually went to 38 holes in that one in the final. So I was comfortable in match play, but with that being said, going into the week 2 months later at the Mid-Am, I wasn't hitting it as great as I would have liked in the practice round. I played 18 holes in a practice round on the big course where we had, you know, that second 18. And then I actually only played nine. I played the back nine on the other course and went into the other nine blind because I was so annoyed with how I was hitting it. Mm-hmm. So I went to the range and I worked some stuff out. And my caddy was totally fine with it. He wasn't feeling his best. So he was like, shoot, I've been here before. I can coach you around. We've done this before. So I was like, okay, great. But I went to the range. I worked some stuff out. And Sammy Schmitz, I was hitting balls next to Sammy earlier in the week, and he won the Mid-Am last year. And one of the things he kind of said to me was, as the week goes on in match play, you don't really get tired because you know, adrenaline just keeps getting you through. And that was one of the things that kind of stuck with me the whole week. So I knew that if I could start hitting it a little bit better and kind of get into a rhythm and get into a, you know, a feel where I was kind of comfortable with my game, you know, maybe we could wreak some havoc in match play. And then the other side of it too is, because I am 25 and technically a mid-am, I turned 25 earlier this year, I spent a lot of time in the off-season last winter in New York kind of trying to put on some weight and working out a good bit. So I felt like in terms of physical fitness, I was in pretty good shape. And kind of like I said, you know, I really, you know, enjoyed playing the second leg of those 36 whole days out there. Those for me were fun. And, you know, that's one of the things I'm going to look forward to do in the next few months. But I really think, you know, that extra work in the gym was huge as it kind of came down throughout that week.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, it's a big advantage being younger and the, you know, especially when, you know, some of those guys, you know, some of the guys are, you know, 40, 42 playing, and it was so hot that week. I mean,
it was so hot that week.
I had the last tee time the first round of the tournament, and I remember it was just, it was one of the hottest, you know, tee off times I've ever had. It was nuts.
Yeah.
But,
it was
yeah, it had to be tough playing that North course blind with those greens. What'd you think overall about the golf course?
I played the back nine, so I didn't see the front, so one was tricky. I think I bogeyed one, and I also played it in the second day in the stroke play when it was really windy that afternoon.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I played better that day. I joked with my caddy, as I mentioned earlier, I usually hit fades and I was hitting draws that whole week. On my 17th hole of the second day on the North course, I hit a cut into this 210-yard par 3 on 17. Like, the ball kind of went up. Instead of falling left, it fell right. And I turned around at JD, my caddy, and I was like, yes, this is it. It went left to right. So I vividly remember that shot. I feel like that was kind of the turning point in my week of kind of going from not hitting it so great to kind of getting back to where I was comfortable.
Yeah, it's funny how just one shot can do it. Golf is such a goofy game.
It's crazy. So there's always, you know, value to be taken from everything. So no doubt.
Yeah. So you know, I know we got a bunch of Twitter questions, and I kind of broke them up. So, you know, in regards to the mid-am, deplorable McFiveson, who his family member faced you in the semis. He wants to know, you know, what you were thinking in that match. So you were three down after six to Mike McDermott, and you know, kind of what changed, what happened, what, you know, how did that momentum flip?
Sure. So Mike's, for those that don't know Mike, he's a heck of a player. I think he has the course record at Stonewall. Again, according to my caddy, he spends a lot of time kind of in that area. But, I mean, I knew he's a tall guy. He hits it great. I think he played basketball in college and then, or excuse me, he played basketball in high school and then he picked up golf and he was like a junior or senior. And I ended up going to a small school to play for them. But, no, Mike's really, really good. And I knew that match was going to be tough. He knew the course. He was comfortable out there. He birdied the first two. And then I made a silly three-putt on the third. I think I probably just got a little aggressive. But kind of like I mentioned earlier, match play is so momentum-driven. And I knew that if I could grind it back and, you know, hit a couple good ones, you know, maybe he made a bad swing and I was able to take advantage of it. Or maybe I could hit a couple shots to 12, 15, 18 feet and make a putt or two. I just kind of took it one shot at a time. I tried to focus on what I can control, but that was tough, no doubt, because he's as comfortable as anyone out there. And that was, I think, in the quarters. So I was definitely, I was kind of going up against a hometown hero. There were probably 40 or 50 guys out there supporting him. So, Mike's a great guy, and it was a ton of fun to go up against him. And even though I got the best of him, I'm sure we'll go up against each other, you know, at some point in the future. But no, he's a stud. So that was, I'm lucky enough to walk away with a W there.
Yeah, I've heard from a buddy who used to play in the Philly section that he's just unbelievable player. I think he won their Philly Am this year, which is...
He did. He that's exactly right. He did.
Mm-hmm. What were some of your favorite holes out there? For those of you guys that don't know Stonewall, it's a 36-hole Tom Doak facility. Really cool place, cool vibe, very cool club. Great piece of property.
Well, I thought the last five were pretty solid.
Yeah, those things are hard. I mean, what you did in that last match was incredible.
So let's run through it. Four was a great hole, you know, where you come in at 3-wood or hybrid, and then it was a really tough, narrow green. Six kind of set up hole to my eye where there was a kind of a creek kind of running down the right side in the middle of it. Eight was a great hole, water left, junk right, and then just a tough green kind of playing back into the wind. Obviously, I'm a huge fan of number nine. As we kind of go towards the back nine, I thought 15, even though it's only 75 yards, it's just
so hard.
Possibly awkward par three. It was so hard.
I don't know. How do you even like that? That it's so hard to hit that green.
So I went back and I've only watched the telecast once, and to be totally honest, it was basically to make sure I didn't embarrass myself on national TV. Just to make sure I didn't do anything stupid. But I don't know if you can hear it in the telecast, but I remember the conversation with my caddy, and we were kind of going back and forth between 8-iron and 7-iron, you know, because you basically had to land it at the front of the green and let it release. So call it, you had to land it at like 64, which is like 4 yards more than I hit 8. And 7 goes 175. So JD and I are going back and forth, and we're like, well, we can't miss left, and you can't miss long, and you can't miss short, and you can't miss. So there's nowhere to miss.
Yeah.
It's such a tough par three, but it's also so fair.
Yep.
And, you know, if you hit a good shot in there, it was great.
The other tricky thing about that hole was that it was really hard to feel the wind because of
it's back in that little corner.
Uh-huh. I remember distinctly, like, having no clue what was going on with the wind when I was playing that hole.
Yeah, I mean, it's so awkward, but in such a fair way.
Mm-hmm. It's, I think that fourth hole that you brought up has got to be one of the hardest par fours under 400 yards I've ever played.
I mean, the tee shot is hard enough, and then that's not even the hard part of the hole. If you go long, you're looking at five at best, or six.
Yeah.
And if you're looking at an impossibly awkward putt, and if you miss right, it's just tough. There's no way about it. It's just tough.
I think that golf course in general is a perfect example. People always are like, it's got to be 7,000 yards. Like, that course at 6,800 yards was like everything you can, you know, handle.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I didn't even mention, you know, 17 or 18. I think 18 was probably my favorite hole on that golf course. But it was a great mix of kind of mixing with the tees and, you know, hitting drivers and 3-woods. And, you know, there were a couple 3-irons there. It's not like it forced you to hit 3-wood or driver anywhere. I saw plenty of guys on number 3, the par 5, you know, hit hybrid just because of how awkward it got. You know, but it's also if you bust driver and bust 3-wood, you can get up there. But, no, it's a really neat spot. And, I really enjoyed being out there. I thought it was. I enjoyed the. Was it the new that only played match play?
Mm-hmm.
A little more. It hit my eye a little bit better, but just a unique, you know, kind of place.
Yeah. So with that match with Scott, you know, a quick question: have you ever seen him hit a wedge not inside of 10 feet?
He's the best. He's the best amateur player under pressure I've ever seen. He just when the chips are down, and we've gone up each other a few times this summer. We played each other, and we played the final round at the Thomas together, Then we went to an aggregate playoff, and I ended up losing on this first sudden death playoff. We went to a 23-for-8 playoff at the U.S. Amateur this year, and not even wood shots, just around the greens, bunker shots, chips. You know, he's so good under pressure with the lob wedge in his hand, and I was gonna, you know, get him. I was like, dude, I'll sacrifice 3 or 4 years of my youth to you to have your wedge game inside 85 yards. It's as good as some tour players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just seems like every time he's got a wedge in his hand, it's like 4 or 5 feet away. So with the final kind of five, like, you know, what was going through your head? You're hanging in there, and, you know, he's just such a tough competitor. It just seemed like you just started to hit shots a lot, really close.
Yeah, well, I felt like I was hitting it pretty good all day. I couldn't get anything to fall. And what I kept telling myself really throughout the day was, you know, match play again. It's just so kind of momentum driven. And if I can turn that four down lead, or four down deficit, I guess, into a two down deficit, being two down is still brutal, but it's a heck of a lot better than being four down. And that momentum, it scares you a little bit. And, you know, we've all played match play. We all know what it's like. And again, the difference between one down and three down is a lot. So I figured if I could give myself a chance. I had a feeling all day that the match was going to go the distance, even though it didn't particularly look like it. Both my parents gave up on me, not once, but twice. They gave up on me, you know, after 27, and then when I missed that putt on 13, they were like, yeah, he's done. So I really wanted to leave everything I had out there. So I had a feeling it might go the distance. But again, if I could just scare him, I thought I had a chance. So kind of after I birdied 14 and 15, made a couple good putts, the hole just started getting a little bit bigger. And I guess you could just say I kind of got hot at the right moment. And the chips were down, and the pressure kind of came up. I guess people talk about a zone. I don't know. The reality is I really don't remember a whole lot of the last 45 minutes. I wish I could give you more.
Yeah.
For hitting a shot on 17, I swear, man, I really don't remember a whole lot of it. I remember everything being very simple. I remember JD would give me a yardage, and I'd be like, okay, you know, how do you like that tree in distance? And yeah, that looks good. Okay. Like everything became very, very easy, I guess you could say. I don't know. But it was a crazy afternoon. And the only other thing I'll say about that is it's probably the most memorable phone call I've ever made to my mom and dad afterwards. It was pretty cool. So I wish I could give you more, but I swear to you, I just don't really remember a whole lot of it.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, it probably just feels like everything blends together, and I mean, so much pressure and so much, you know, adrenaline that it probably, you know, it I couldn't even imagine.
I remember, like, one of the few things that I do remember is I just really tried to work on my breathing. It's just, you know, be just try to slow down everything I did, but I don't know. It was crazy. So, yeah.
So you win on the 37th hole with a birdie, and, you know, winning the U.S. Mid-Am gets you a bunch of exemptions into, you know, USGA events for years to come. But obviously the big one of them all is, you know, the invitation to the Masters. So, like, how long did it take for it to, you know, set in where you, you know, before it, you know, where, wow, I'm playing in the Masters?
After I made the putt and hugged Scott and my caddy, and I had a bunch of friends kind of come down, there's a point where I kind of snapped out of it, and I looked up the hill where a lot of the crowd were right before you know, the little trophy presentation on the ninth green, and it kind of hit me that it was like, oh wow, like what just happened? it was like I had woken up. And it definitely took some time to kind of later you know, kind of figure it out. But, you know, I had a bunch of buddies that were kind of texting me like, hey, what are you doing tonight? You going out? You know, you having fun? And I told all of them, I was like, no, the only thing I want to do, and I told them that the next day because that night was just, you know, talking to my family members. But I was just like, no, all I want to do is sit on a couch and, you know, just revel in what this feels like. And I still pinch myself. It's a dream come true. It's something that, you know, you think about as a kid, and it's pretty special.
Mm-hmm. So have you gotten the invitation yet for Augusta and the Masters?
I haven't received, and I've been told it comes around Christmas, but basically I've talked to a few, you know, of the members and committee guys down at Augusta, and basically what they sent me a couple weeks after the mid-am was an invitation to receive the invitation, just in terms of dates and stuff to look out for. But I've spoken to a few of those guys, and I'm looking forward to April. So we're in the clear, and I didn't put my foot in my mouth too much, so
mm-hmm.
that's where that is.
So Silverstein told me that you got to play Augusta when you were at USC. So you know, you've seen the course before. Is that the only time you've played it? And what do you think about the golf course and how it fits your game?
So you'll like this. I don't think I've told you this before, but the first time I actually played Augusta, my senior year, our athletic director Pat Hayden took us down there. And the first time I actually played Augusta was with another senior on the team, our assistant coach at the time, and a guy who gets to play Augusta every year as a marker, Jeff Knox. That was pretty cool. And it's by far the most nervous I've ever been over first tee shot. The guys in the clubhouse kind of came out and they watched us, and it's I think the walk, or what I remember is the walk from two after you get your tee shot and you kind of go around the corner and the golf course kind of opens up. To me, that's what I imagine for an avid golfer and someone that plays competitively. That's what I imagine heaven looking like.
Yeah.
I don't know what I kind of can and can't say, but I pinch myself every time I think about the opportunity to go down there. And as far as the way it sets up, I like to hit fades. You know, it's going to come out, or people have made big deals out of how the golf course allegedly favors guy who moved the ball from right to left. I mean, I agree with it in practicality and, you know, the way that the golf course kind of sets up, but last I checked, there's a guy who won there six times that pretty exclusively hit ball right.
Yeah.
I've got a little bit of speed. I'd like to put on a few more pounds and a few more yards, because I think it'll turn some spots where having 8-iron instead of 7-iron into your hand, you know, it lands a little softer. It'll allow you to go after a couple more pins. But when I played the golf course, I understand it's probably very different than the golf course that I'll see in April. But, you know, fairways are good size, and I feel like I'm a pretty decent iron player. So I'm not going to change a whole lot as it kind of goes forward. If I have to lay up on 13, well, then I have to lay up on 13.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, if I can't get to 2, well, then I guess I'll just lay up to a good wedge yardage. If you give yourself 18, 15 footers for birdie, you know, it's, in theory, you should play all right.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting golf course. I think it's such a great tournament golf course because, you know, it's tremendously fair in the sense of it's got a lot of width off the tee, and you know, you can play any shot off the tee. And the thing it does that, you know, I think it does better than almost any other tournament golf course is the shot is out in front of you and it says, you know, hit this shot, and if you pull it off, you receive the greatest reward. You can make eagles, you know, you can just really score. But if you don't, it just kills you. If you try and pull that shot off and you miss it, you know, you're going to make a double.
Yeah, no, there's definitely a lot of focus and commitment, you know, that's required on a lot of those shots. And I'm sure, like, you know, anyone listening to this, my birthday is April 10th, so it's always right around Augusta. Mm-hmm. And what I want to do during that week is nothing but sit on the couch and watch, you know, old friends try and compete. So I'm excited to kind of see, you know, after all those times where I've been an armchair quarterback, so to speak, you know, how we can kind of go and deliver and focus over some of those shots. And I'm sure that, you know, it's easy for me to sit here now and say it, but, you know, I'm sure that when I play 12 in the event, it'll be a little different than me sitting there and saying, oh, it's just a smooth 8-iron to the middle of the green. So,
yeah.
I talked to a couple buddies, and they're just like, yeah, that's not exactly how it goes, too. You would know. I wouldn't. You're right.
Yeah, I bet it's a lot like what we were talking about with 15 at Stonewall, where it's just very, very, very hard.
yeah, I mean, you sit there and you're like, oh, it's just an 8-iron to the front of the green. It's like, well, you know, throw a decent-sized crowd behind you that's judging every move you make and then can talk. So I'm sure the wind is swirling in six different directions. I don't know. I'm just, like I said, small targets, focus on what you can control. Try and give yourself a bunch of 15, 18-footers.
Yeah. We got a bunch of Twitter questions around the Masters, so we'll just kind of go through some of these quick here. Andy Roderick wants to know, what does your Masters prep look like? I know you've hit on kind of putting on some pounds and getting some more speed in the swing. What else are you planning to really work on?
Well, it's no secret that lag putting is at an absolute premium out there, so a lot of speed work, and not just, you know, like your 10, 15, 20 footers. It's, I tend to putt a little bit from around the greens, you know, if I'm like just off. So, it'll be a lot of longer ones, you know, 40, 45, 50 footers that I'd really like to kind of get some good work in, you know, judging lies around the greens and stuff like that. There's going to be times where I have to, you know, probably pitch out or play safe or, you know, not hit my best shot, or maybe on a par five, you know, way up. So I really want to get my wedge game sharp, you know, controlling the spin, controlling the trajectory, hitting specific yardages, knowing the difference between what 83 and 85 yards feels like. I know that sounds awfully specific, but that's the level that these guys are. You know, one of the reasons that Dustin Johnson's had such a great year is because he would go out, he would tell himself to wedge certain yardages, and he would look on TrackMan, which is exact as it gets, and, you know, he would kind of figure out what those things felt like. And those are the kind of things that guys, both on tour and at the amateur and college level, have become so elite at. And if I can kind of lock in on some of those numbers and play to my strengths, I'm not going to try and figure out how to hit a control draw on 13, because there's just no point, you know. Mm-hmm. Does it help? Could it give me an extra 10 or 15 yards? Yeah, sure. But how many times can you hit that shot under pressure versus getting a 5 or 4-iron in versus like a 6 or a 7-iron? It's just, the risk-reward doesn't make a ton of sense. So I'm going to try and really focus on the strengths that I already have, improving the things that need improvement that are really just works, such as wedges and speed. And then beyond that, one of the things that I haven't really touched on is Freddie Couples lives in Southern California. You know, when Phil gets healthy, he lives in Southern California. Bo Hoffler, who was in Walker Cup for a couple of years ago. Max Homa, you know, Cantlay. There's guys who are in the area that I can surround myself with and begin to feel comfortable with them and have the opportunity to kind of pick their brain of what's important. Those types of things are absolutely invaluable. And I'm convinced that being comfortable around those guys is going to play a huge part in allowing yourself move beyond what the situation is and to focus on what you can control and really give you the opportunity to really lock in on yourself and to play the best golf that you can.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think comfort level in golf is so important because it, you know, it has such an impact on, you know, how you're thinking, how you're feeling, you know, how you're swinging. And that, I think that's a great, you know, call. Just, you know, surrounding yourself, playing a lot of rounds with the world-class players so that you, sure. you know, you feel like you belong and you're not, there's no wow, you know, shock factor.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that, you know, I'm as good as Phil, because it's just not true. He's got a trophy case to prove it and a couple sport coats to prove it. So, but am I capable of going out and competing with those guys for 4 days if I'm sharp? I mean, I feel like I can. You know, everyone has stretches where they play great. And, like I said, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm as good as tour players, because I'm not, like these guys. It's true. You can look at my world ranking, and it's just not true. But, you know, as I mentioned before, the golf ball doesn't know who you are. And if you give yourself the opportunity to put yourself out there and to play great and to prepare the way that you feel comfortable doing, maybe, you know, on Thursday on the range when you're hitting balls next to a, you know, a Jason Day or a Rory or Big Cat or Tiger, you know, someone that everyone my generation has looked up to since the time they first started playing. You know, if you feel comfortable in that situation and you can focus on your routine, that's what I really think will give you the best opportunity to play great.
Yeah, I agree. So Ed Lohr Tracker, the, you know, wants to know if you're going to be doing a GoFundMe campaign.
Nope.
I think that one backfired on Sammy.
I'll throw my dad under the bus on this one. I love my dad. My dad's going to be on the bag for me for the par 3 contest.
Uh-huh.
This is the only time in 25 years that I've ever held a trump card over him. Short answer is no.
So your dad's doing the par 3. Who, you know, Powell Arms is wondering what time he shows up to caddy. And I figure, you know, if you're not going with Powell, who will be on the bag?
I'm going to use my caddy, John Doherty, who I've used a good bit in the metropolitan area over the course of the last couple of years. He's caddied in 59 USGA events. And, you know, it's obviously a dream of mine to be able to go down there. And to play, but, you know, as a longtime guy who's a pretty seasoned, you know, caddy, you know, it's also a dream of his, and I think it'll be really neat to kind of share the experience with him, to go down there and see if we can, you know, kind of do the best we can, and there's no one else I've even considered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think having familiarity with your game and everything is huge, too. So, you know, how many, you know, you get to play down there as much, you know, as you can. How many trips do you plan on making or hoping to make in the next few months?
Well, I'm going to, you know, I've got two on the books right now. We have a good family friend who's down there, so that'll be one. But, you know, I'm going to try and get down there as much as I can without stepping on anyone's toes. It's a very sacred place, and I absolutely respect I respect the rules. So, you know, the last thing I would ever want to do is overstay my welcome, which I don't plan on doing. But I'm going to try and get down there a little bit. And, you know, like I said, you know, we've all sat on the couch and watched all, you know, 72 hours of pre, you know, current and post-Masters coverage. So going down there, essentially being in a museum of something that we've all idolized for so long, you know, I'd like to kind of get over the hump of, you know, this is where Phil hit that shot on 13, and that's where Tiger chipped down 16, and that's where Bubba hit the, you know, wedge shot on 10. And, you know, I'd like to go down there and focus on the golf course and, as I said, you know, focus on where I want to hit it on my game and what it takes to play great. But I'm sure I'll get down there a little bit, you know, here in the spring as it kind of gets closer to the event.
Mm-hmm. So last week you were at the Walker Cup practices, and Would love to talk a little bit about that. So the Walker Cup is in 2017, and it's at the course you grew up playing, LA Country Club. So, you know, where does kind of the Walker Cup rank on, like, bucket list things to do, say, if you get the nod and get one of the spots on the 10-person team?
Sure. Well, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you got to earn your way on. So to even be considered and to be in the discussion is a very, very high honor, a dream in and of itself. But I would rank it, I mean, is it possible to have two 1As in terms of golf? I mean, it'd be Augusta and you know, and having the opportunity to represent your country for the Walker Cup. So I've had two goals for the last year, and I'll continue to have two goals for the next 9 months. And we've just talked about them. It's to go down to Augusta and to play great and to do the best I can and to do everything I can, you know, from on and off the course to try and have the opportunity to earn my way onto that team to represent the United States and to represent, you know, the USGA and to try and bring back the Walker Cup to where it belongs.
Yeah, they got kind of drubbed the last, we got drubbed the last time out, so hopefully we can bring the cup back here. With an up close, in person, you know, look at all these college kids. I mean, it seems like every year they're just getting better and better. What were some guys, who were some guys that just, you know, really impressed you, that were invited to the practice?
Yeah, I think you just hit the nail on the head. They're all so incredibly talented, and it's very humbling and very eye-opening to see their games up close, and the fact that they constantly remind me that this is off-season is even more scary. They're all super talented. I mean, I could go and talk to all of them or talk about each and every one of them, but, I mean, Matt and John Hoda are so efficient around the greens. Like, how well Sean and Jimmy Stanger and Gavin all drive it. I mean, how just elite, you know, wedge players Doug Kim and Dylan Meyer are, Zalatoris and Dalkey, how well they hit it. How the way that, you know, like Colin and Hardy can have the feel of a tour player and the way they compose and conduct themselves. I mean, you can just go on and on, you know, about all these guys. I won't touch on all of them, but I had the opportunity to play with all of them, and it's just so impressive. And more than any of that, they're just great kids. I mean, they're so much fun to be around. They're great guys. It's a great group. And a lot of personalities from around the country, and, you know, we have guys from Texas and Chicago and, you know, Florida and Northern California. It's a really special, cool group, and the way that Mav and Scott, you know, talk about the event and the level of respect they have for it, and so the past Walker Cuppers kind of coming out to support, it's a really special thing, and you can feel and really get a sense of just how amazing, you know, the opportunity to try and earn your way onto that team really is. So, you know, hopefully I did okay out there, and obviously, it's you know, there's a lot of time between now and when the selection is made. But as I mentioned, you know, I'm going to do everything in my power that I can to have the opportunity to represent the club and the other players in the USGA and, you know, kind of ultimately the United States. So it's, yeah, it makes me kind of step back. It's a special thing, and I have nothing but respect for anyone that's ever represented the U.S. on one of those teams.
So we got a request from one of your fellow Walker Cup hopefuls. Dylan Meyer wants us to have you do your 2 hours later and Rock Bottom impersonations from SpongeBob.
2 hours later. Rock Bottom. Dylan and I figured out within about a matter of 15 minutes that we had the exact same sense of humor, and we played alternate shots together. I think the entire time, besides just making fun of each other, you know, we would just sit there and be, you know,
it's he seems like a great kid.
Yeah, that and then Hardy's, you know, I'm a huge fan of the boys over it. Being in New York for 2.5 years, you know, your sarcasm changes a little bit, and you understand just how big of a deal, you know, Pat football is, and hockey and all that. And Hardy and I, you know, are both big fans of the blog Barstool Sports, and they came out with a funny little video, you know, of Canadian tourism or whatever. We played each other, and I mean, we're high-fiving and slapping each other on the backs, and oh, good shot there, Gordo. Oh, get yourself a Bolson, eh?
that video is great.
Look what you got on underneath your jacket. More jeans. Oh, sorry.
you might have a future in like that Frank Caliendo guy with some impersonations.
I will never touch Frank. I could watch those videos time and time again. That guy is such a talent. It's unbelievable. No, we just have fun with it. It's everyone has little inside jokes, and anyways, we had a kick out of it. It was cool.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'll put a video of the Gordo video in there for everybody in the podcast link, so anybody that hasn't seen it can see it. It's pretty funny, and pretty
sportsmanship.
Yeah, sportsmanship is the key theme.
Sportsmanship.
So, anyways, so if you were gonna bet the house on one of the guys from the practices winning a major, who would it be? You know, you only get to pick one guy, and you know, to win a major. Who is it?
I don't know, man. I'm gonna give you such a non-answer with this one. I mean, obviously, Mavs. You know, number one world ranking is obviously pretty strong, but I mean, I look back to playing with each one of those guys, and all of them just bring something different to it. And like I said, if that's them in off season when they're quote unquote not sharp, oh boy, we're in a world of hurt. You know, as we look forward to the summer, I don't know. I mean, now I guess just based off his ranking, I honestly can't even answer that because I still follow him in college, and I mean, any given week, one of those guys, they're all so good. You know, we've kind of talked about it before, and I follow some of the stuff that you and the guys over at No Laying Up do, and I mean, it's amazing how guys can break onto the scene and get confidence in themselves and start playing great. So I mean, I can tell you if not Scott or I, because we're mid-ams and we're pretty comfortable where we're at, but all those guys are so talented, and it'll be super fun just to kind of watch their progression as they get older.
Mm-hmm. So, wanted to talk a little bit about golf courses, and want to be mindful of your time here. So, you know, obviously LACC's got a new course. Not a lot of people have seen it. I think it's only open to member play now. Tell the audience a little bit about that South course. How do you like it?
Oh, it's awesome. I've only played it a couple times, but a piece of land it's on between Wilshire and Santa Monica Boulevard is pretty spectacular. Gil Hance kind of went in and changed around a few things and, you know, made some different adjustments to certain holes and the layout. He took out a ton of trees. It has a really similar feel to the North Course, but it's much more kind of adjusted towards member play. It's just really fun, and it's got some great vistas, you know, of that kind of Wilshire Santa Monica corridor. The greens aren't nearly as severe as the North. It doesn't have near the length of the North, but I mean, if I had a chance, you know, to play all the courses in LA and I could sneak out there, anyone I've ever taken out to go check it out. I mean, I took Scott out there, you know, from before the practice session started. He loved it. I mean, he kind of said to me, he's like, why'd you ever leave? This is amazing. So, I've got nothing but great reviews on the South, and I think it's a really sneaky, really solid course.
So having now lived in New York, and you know, you also have lived in LA, those are two of the greatest, you know, golf cities in America. What do you think is the best city of golf?
It's not even close. Are we including Long Island?
I always say hour within Metro Center. So
if we throw it within an hour and a half, it's not even close. Within an hour, I still think it's really hard to beat New York.
Yeah, I think it...
Now, that being said, Chicago is a very close second. I would say Atlanta's got some good ones. I'd have to think about this, but...
I think Philly...
Philadelphia's in the discussion for sure. Boston's in the discussion for sure. There's a lot of ones in Boston you don't really think about, to be honest, but I think it's New York, and I don't really even think it's negotiable.
Yeah, if you include all of Long Island, it's game over.
Yeah.
I think if it's an hour, there can be discussion, but you know that Long Island list is unbelievable. So what are your?
I'll throw you a sneaky one that you don't think of the world. If you take out, you know, Great Britain and Ireland, obviously there's so many that are so close over there, but I would throw Sydney or Melbourne in there.
Oh yeah, you get the sand belt courses.
Yeah,
you got Melbourne, that Kingston Heath place that had the World Cup looks absolutely spectacular.
Guys go over there, and I mean, I've never heard anything but just overwhelmingly raving reviews.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of our subscribers to the newsletter wrote up. He went on an 8-day trip there. I think he played 10 courses. He did a big write up that we're going to put up later this week on just his experience, and the pictures he shared just look so spectacular. It's definitely high on my bucket list. Have you been over there?
I haven't. I'd love to go. It's on my short list of things. I'm a big surfer. I'd love to stop in Fiji and check out, you know, some of the breaks that are going over there. But I can pretty confidently tell you it's not going to happen in the next 9 months. But as I look forward, I'd love to, you know, make that a reality. That'd be really cool.
Well, the beauty of Australia is it's summer when it's winter here. So, you know, maybe next year this time would be a good time to go.
Absolutely. We'll see if we can get something on the books. It'd be a kick to go down there and check it out. But that'd be a blast.
Yeah, so let's just do some real quick rapid fire, and then I'll let you go. You've been on for an hour now, so we'll do some rapid fire questions and get you out of here. So who is your favorite player on tour to watch?
Tiger when he's playing well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, shoot, the whole golf world, when he was down at Albany, I was involved in 4 or 5 different group texts of, you know, what was going on. I mean, everyone was watching. If you were working that Thursday and Friday, you're lying to yourself, because you were, if you're an avid golf fan, we all know you were streaming it at the office on some kind of device.
Yeah.
But I have always really enjoyed watching Adam Scott. I love his demeanor out there. I love the way he hits it. Obviously, I love his swing. You know, if you want to include buddies, I always love to watch, you know, kind of Jordan and Justin, and some of, you know, kind of watch Smiley. But I'll say it's a lot of fun to watch guys who I kind of grew up with as they're making their way kind of through the tours, you know, whether it's mini tours or the web, when they receive sponsors exemptions, to kind of see how they do out there. and fair against the big guys and how they handle themselves. And it was really cool to watch, like, Michael Johnson last year and, you know, how well he played. You know, I think he took, like, T3 or T4. But you know, events like that, or, like, a Bobby Wyatt, he made some noise at some point. But as far as favorite players go, I'm always going to be a Tiger guy. But I love Adam Scott's game. He used to be fun to watch.
Yeah, it's Scott is, I mean, man, if that guy made a couple more putts, he'd have so many wins. It's crazy.
Look at his finish in Florida earlier this year when he was on it. You know, I mean, the guy's a stud. He's a total stud.
Yeah. It's so you've been a mid-am for a year. What's your favorite mid-am tournament outside the U.S. mid-am?
Sure. Yeah, you beat me to that one. I had the chance to play in the George Thomas earlier this year at LA Country Club and play with a few of the guys, Chris Mickelson, Mike McCoy, Harvey, and just the camaraderie of the whole, you know, I guess you could say tour scene is really special. And it's a lot of guys that have kind of grown up looking up to, and it's a really unique opportunity to kind of get to know some of those guys and pick their brains and how they really balance, you know, playing at a high amateur level, but also, you know, their time professionally. And it's a really kind of unique, you know, tour, and I just feel very, very, you know, blessed and kind of just honored to be, you know, a younger guy on that scene and to try and live up to the standards that they've set before me.
Yeah.
Forget the fact that they're all just great guys, too. I mean, they're just fun to be around.
Yeah, it's good time. Mid-Am golf is... It's fun. I think the vibe of a mid-am tournament's as good as it gets. You know, everybody wants to play well. Everybody's really competitive, but after the round, everybody's laid back. You know, just there to have a good time and hang out.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, I swear, having a beer or two, you know, with some of the guys, you know, after it's all said and done, with the sun goes down, just the stories that kind of come out, and you know, hearing about them and their families or where they're from and talking about golf, it's a great group. It's super fun.
So outside of Harvey, who we've talked about, which mid-am has the most game? Like who kind of was like, you may have heard of him, but you're like, wow, this guy can really play.
I'm gonna give you a few guys. Your boy, or, you know, our good friend Todd Mitchell carries himself like a tour player, and he's just a great athlete. And I think as I get older, from a physical standpoint, I'd love to, you know, kind of be as physically intact as he is.
He hits his driver so well.
What's up?
He hits a driver so well.
He just looks like a tour pro. You know, him and Brad Wilder, like, you look at those guys on the range, and you're just like, you definitely play to cash checks. So those two guys, for sure. I'll put Mike McCoy's short game up against the majority of the PGA Tour. It fascinates me how well he chips in his bunker play and how well he pitches it. I mean, Mike, I have so much respect for Mike. I mean, he missed playing. He was in a playoff to go to the U.S. Open this year for an alternate shot, which ended up getting in. But, I mean, he played in the Senior Open this year, but he nearly played in the U.S. Open. It's just, it's so much game, and it's super fun to watch. A guy that I've gotten pretty close to on the East Coast, being back there in the city, is an older guy named George Zeringer. And George works so hard on this game. He has a great tempo, great rhythm. He's a great putter. But I've always kind of asked him, like, George, how were you competitive for so long? And his response about missing a beat was, well, I could get it up and down from the garbage can. He just chips and pitches it so well. And whenever I see him, I always try and kind of pick his brain, you know, about different shots around the greens. And it's just fun to be around and to see how some of these guys get it in the hole. And trying to think, Gene Elliott uses a long putter, and I use a long putter, so I, you know, like the. I mean, Gene's just best in every way. He's like just so much fun to be around. But yeah, it's a great group, but I would definitely, those are kind of the first guys that come to mind, and some of the ways that their games are kind of geared towards, for sure.
Yeah, I feel like Mike McCoy would be just the worst guy to see in match play. Just be like, oh God, just grind it out.
We played together at the Thomas, and I'll never forget, there was, besides the fact you put every bunker shot to like a foot, and I was just like, wow, amazing. But he was behind the green on one. I don't know if you've ever played LA, to a back left pin. I mean, the shot's impossible. You need to just kind of have the ball slide at the face and pick up as much spin as you can. And he hit this little chip shot where he just took the legs from under the ball, and this thing bounced once and stopped on a dime, and then it rolled the next 6 feet. Like, it literally stopped. The ball stopped. But because the slope was so severe, it rolled another 6 feet to a foot. And I just kind of shook my head, and I'm just like, oh, my gosh, that's, I don't have that shot. That's so impressive.
Yeah. It's that's a guy I played with at the Mid-Am. He was hitting it everywhere. And, like, we get off it, and he hit some of the, like, probably, like, four or five of the most incredible flop shots I've ever seen. Like,
who was it?
Darren Overson, who's from Utah.
Okay.
And you could tell he was fighting his swing, but, like, he didn't make match play, but, like, you know, if he put me where his ball was, I would have probably shot 90 ball days. And this guy just was getting up and down from everywhere. I mean, it's incredible how some of these guys get it done, and it just, your short game saves you so many shots. You know, you can hit it.
Oh, totally.
You can hit it pretty much everywhere. So if you had to play one course every day for the rest of your life, what course would it be?
I guess it's tough to beat. Cypress is really fun. I love going out there. What a neat spot. I'll tell you, National Golf Links out on Long Island, it's got such a unique, kind of cool vibe to it. It's really fun. It's a great match play course, also a great stroke play course, and you got to go out and post a number. The vistas and the finishing holes are absolutely amazing. You know, having a south side on the porch, as anyone that's ever been out there, you know, has done. I mean, as the sun goes down over there, you know, kind of over the sound, you got to take a step back and just realize how lucky you are to be there. But one that I guess is kind of off the beaten path that I'll throw you is this place up in Montana called Rock Creek. It's a really, really neat spot, and it's just a really fun golf course. It's not super demanding off the tee, but it's a place where you can make a bunch of birdies. But it also has plenty of teeth and plenty of length. There's a ton of tee boxes you can play from. Just a really, just a fun golf course, and a really great kind of finishing stretch.
That's a good little sleeper there. National Golf Links is like number one on my bucket list. I'm a huge Seth Rayner, CB McDonald fan, so it's kind of like the mecca.
It's a special place, and I've had the opportunity to play out there a couple of times, and it's just, when you get there, and you will, it's just a really neat, cool golf course, just a special place.
Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I want to get you out of here. We've been talking for an hour 15. I really appreciate the time, and we'll look forward to kind of tracking your progress as we get closer to the Masters. And thanks so much for coming on. Anybody that doesn't follow Stuart on Twitter and Instagram, give it a follow. I know we'll probably be seeing something from you when you get your get the best Christmas gift you're going to get this year.
Yeah, I love my mom and dad, but that one's awfully tough to beat.
So thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate the time.
Oh, well, thank you very much for having me, and you know, I look forward to seeing you down the road, and can't wait to follow some of your content as it goes on. So thank you very, very much.
Hey, have a good one, and have a great holiday season.
Same to you, bud. We'll talk to you soon.
Later.